Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren, and on the other side of the country, we've got Mr. David Rose North Martino. You're wearing a rose today.
I get. Is that four
yeah.
days now?
Yeah, you're
that's good.
Full meal deal now. So what is going on with you? You've been off again for another week. What do you think you're doing?
I know. You're going to rain me
yeah,
in.
And it's like, and then you're all over Facebook and you're drunk. Because there's nothing but liquor on there. I don't understand you.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
Just living a crazy
life. You are. And we just had, it was just Canadian Thanksgiving, so that's exciting.
How was that?
Dead birds. Yeah, it was fine. I don't know. I think I slept.
Well, after eating all the food.
What food? No, McDonald's. Northern. No, that's you. Northern Lights happened as well. See, I put pictures up, so.
Oh, I saw
yeah,
that.
Pretty exciting, yeah.
Eh? It's beautiful. See. It's better than the fires.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you don't get that in Boston. Boston.
No.
You get the red lights. You had the marathon. Did you run in the marathon?
I didn't. No.
Were you even up?
I was drinking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Can't run and drink at the same time. Spoil your drink.
And you write. I can't believe that. I know. Your wife crazy. Writes. I know. It's not you.
Yeah. I farm it up to her.
You're always hungover. Well, there we go. Well, of course, it's another week, and we are starting out the week with a new author that we haven't had before. Now, the book we're going to focus on is called Blood Mark. Sounds exciting. And the author is a Canadian from Vancouver, J.P. McLean. Thank you for being here.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Great to be here. I'd have a drink, but I'm afraid day drinking makes me nappy.
Oh. Yeah, well, you see, I guess if you do it like Dave, you're kind of doing it all day, all night. It's...
Yeah, exactly. You don't
know. Well conditioned.
You know whether it's day or night.
It's all a blur. Just I'll tell you. Anyway, well, so Joanne, what got you into this writing world? First of all, like where did it come from for you?
Well, it happened. It started happening about 10 years ago, or a little more now, 12 years ago, I suppose, because I had been traveling with my husband for work, and we were in Tucson for 3 years and a town in Mexico for 1 year and in the Baja for a year. So we came back to the West Coast in the fall, and the rains had started and the hockey had started, and I'm not a hockey fan, but it was on the television. And I was sitting in the living room watching the rain pelt sideways against the window, thinking, what on earth am I going to do this first winter back on the West Coast? And I had been reading a lot of paranormal books and supernatural books, and so I thought, you know, I'm going to try my hand at writing, because it's been something I've been interested in. Didn't ever think I had the talent to do it or the idea big enough for a book or anything, but I just thought I'd do that to test it out. And turns out I absolutely loved doing it. So that winter's poking away at a particular scene ended up turning into a whole book that later had to be rewritten, of course, many times. But that's how I got into it.
Wow. So what about the paranormal is it that draws you in? Is it like personal experience, something you've been through, or do you just know a lot of people that have been involved, or...
No.
What brought you into getting into paranormal part?
I you know, it's a couple of things. First of all, it's I have these very vivid dreams of flying, and I know I'm not the only one, so don't laugh. But that certainly fueled some of it. But the other thing that fuels it is I find it fascinating. You know, the idea that we don't yet know. I mean, people obviously can't fly, but can people read minds? Maybe they can.
Yeah.
So I like the possibility that these things exist, even though perhaps they don't. I just like the possibility that they do. I find them fascinating.
Well, the mind is a very powerful thing. It's really, you know, and if you're relying on your own eyes and ears, and the brain fills in a lot of holes, so it's really tough to know. Do you actually, when you do a book like this, do you actually go out and meet people that are involved in paranormal investigations or mediums, or do you kind of get, information that way?
No, really. It's mostly just my imagination. Yeah. I don't need any extra help in the imagination department. I seem to have an overactive one as it is, but I do tend to focus on certain things, and dreams seem to always come into it for some reason, I suppose, because I always have such vivid dreams. But no, I don't. I do like the idea of the unexplained.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of an interesting thing. And plus, I guess that you feel a certain amount of freedom with that as well, where you can go with something like that.
Oh, absolutely. The sky is the limit in terms of that. And when I'm writing, I tend to layer things into it. Like, it doesn't always come to me all at once. Little bits and pieces come. I spend a lot of time outlining what I'm going to write. And as I'm outlining it, all these additional ideas come to my mind. Like in this particular book, Blood Mark, she's got she's born with what she thinks is a birthmark, and it's across her face and it's all over her body. And I just wondered about the idea about how that would impact you growing up as a child and as a young adult, how that would impact you, and then how you would react if that started disappearing, how it would change your life. And so I found that fascinating, that particular concept. And I wove in the issues of family. What is family? Because she's been abandoned as a baby. Was it because of the marks? She doesn't know. But brings up a lot of issues of family and making your own family versus the family you're born with. And so it just gives you a lot of area where you can expand when you've got the supernatural as one other element. There's time slip in this as well, which I find super fascinating, because I think about all of those times when people say, I was in the right place at the right time with the right people, and then this event happened, or this tremendous win for them happened. And if one of those elements was altered in time, that wouldn't have happened. So I also found that really fascinating and was able to bring that into the story in a very dramatic way.
What would you call this type of writing? Like what kind? Cause right, lately in fiction, there's so many different categories. There's so many different areas to go. How would you describe your writing?
I describe it as supernatural thriller. Now, I used to, my other books, I were more solidly in the urban fantasy genre. They weren't as thriller-esque, although they got more thriller-esque as the series progressed. But it's interesting when you're talking to people about your book, if you say paranormal, they think it's a romance, which it isn't. And then if you say fantasy, they don't know what that is. They tend to think about J.R.R. Tolkien and these fantastical world-building books. So when you say supernatural, everyone kind of understands Superman or Batman or Spider-Man. You know, they have in their mind that that's what this is about. And it's more close to the book than the other genres. So that's where I would put it, supernatural thriller.
So now the main character, I believe, in this book is Jane Walker.
Yes.
Who is Jane Walker?
Jane Walker, she was abandoned at birth and was raised in the child welfare system. And she was abandoned at the Joyce train station. And Vancouver has a Joyce Sky train station. And so a nurse at the hospital named her Joyce, and she grew up thinking herself as Joyce. But when she found out, when she turned 19 and was able to get her records, and she learned that that's how she got her name and that she was abandoned at the Joyce train station, she changed her name to her first name, which was Baby Jane Doe. So she adopted Jane because she thought that was a more fitting name, and she hated the name Joyce. And so she grew up street smart. She was, because of the marks on her face, she was very withdrawn and bullied until she meets her best friend, who is Sadie Prescott. And Sadie is her opposite. So Sadie's beautiful. And the pair of them, growing up in the child welfare system, learn how to read people. They learn how to fight. And Jane keeps a knife in her boot. And she learns that the first time she puts a motorcycle helmet on and it covers her face and she's able to put the visor down and hide, from that moment on, she is completely on her motorcycle as often as she can be, because it's an escape for her, not only physically, but people can't see her face. So that's who she is. And she doesn't know what this mark is at the beginning of the book, but she sure knows what it is at the end.
Now, you mentioned, of course, because you've talked about nightmares and dreams. So is that sort of why your main character has heart-wrenching nightmares in the book?
Because of the...
Because is it personal for you? Is that part... Like, we all put ourselves into our characters quite often when we write. Yeah. Is that kind of part of you that you've put into your character?
Yeah, I would say. For sure. I do have a moment when I wake up. If I've been having a dream, an intense dream, there's a moment, you know, that 2-3 seconds when you wake up that you're still confused about what happened and whether it was, you don't really think of whether it was real or not, but you have to, you know, claw your emotions back. Because sometimes I wake up and I'm mad about something that happened in a dream, and it takes a while to shake that anger or whatever emotion has come out in the dream. So when Jane dreams in this book, they're very vivid dreams. They're actually more than dreams. She doesn't realize until later that she actually can move things and touch things in her dream. But at the beginning, it's just such horrific things that she is witnessing in her dreams, and she doesn't understand why all she sees are these terrible things. And it's not till later that she realizes why. So absolutely, that intensity of the dream would definitely be a little bit of me in there, for sure. The other thing that's a little bit of me in there is I didn't want her to be perfect. I didn't want her to be really smart, really rich, really beautiful, or anything like that. I wanted her to have some flaws. So one of my own flaws that I'm constantly being teased about is my my need to have everything neat and tidy, you know, everything square. And so I gave that to her because I knew I could, I knew how to deal with that. I knew how to make it annoying. I have some experience in that. So I gave it up.
Nothing better than having an annoying character.
There's got to be something, right?
Yeah, yeah. I gotta. Well, I wonder. So when you sit down to write something like this, you say that you sort of kind of get an outline done ahead of time. You're sort of planning it out. So do you plan these things to be more than one book with these characters, or do you just want it to be done and over?
No, I always start off with it just being one book. And as I'm writing the book, sometimes I will, as I'm writing it, I'll think, oh, I could actually take this into a second book. For example, in this particular book, there is an offering bowl. It's an Inca offering bowl. And I found the bowl doing research on Inca culture. And at the end of the book, we don't know where that bowl is. And it's not a major point in the story. But it can be a major point in the story. And I'm going to be bringing that bowl back in the next book because I'm outlining the next book right now. So some of the stories as I'm writing them suggest to me they could go further. And of characters can always go further.
Huh. I wonder. So do you find, like, when you write these books and you involve your own personality, of course, in the character, do you feel like you're sort of making yourself a little bit vulnerable to readers?
Well, I don't relate that strongly to the character. I mean, I give the character, this one and my former character, I give them little traits of mine, but I don't invest myself. I don't identify completely with them. They're younger than me. They're, you know, probably more interesting than me in many respects. I don't. I have had people say, oh, you know, if they make this into the movie, you should star. And I look at them crossways. That's the furthest thing from my mind.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, you've written a lot of books. And I'm just wondering, have you found that you have any motifs or anything that maybe repeats throughout your novels? Whether it's conscious or unconscious.
Well, one conscious repeat is I like to make my female characters strong, independent characters. I don't like them to think that there is going to be someone to come and save them. So that is a definite conscious thing that I do in the books. I do try to make them different, and that was really important to me, that the Jane character in this book is very much different than the character that was in the last series. The last series being the first that I wrote, I think I probably made her too perfect. I didn't give her enough flaws. And so I was conscious that this character, I wanted her to be very different. So she comes from a lower income bracket. She raised on the street. She doesn't have a family. And she is surrounded by people who are hookers and drug dealers and back alley type folk. So in that regard, I definitely consciously did that to the character.
Where do you get your characters from then? I mean, I see the one, your last character who was perfect, you probably got it off of me. but where do you grab? Like, is it total imagination that throws a character into your brain, or is it that you're riding the SkyTrain, or you're doing something, or at a coffee shop and you see a character and then you sort of map it from that person, or what is it for you?
I think a lot of writers are very observant people, and I'm certainly one of those people. Like, I will sit in a coffee shop and just, you know, rake over the people, I call them characters, rake over the characters in the shop and listen into conversations. And I'm very observant that way. So a little bits and pieces come from people that I see or things that they say. In this particular book, I've got to say, have you ever seen the show or seen the ad for the show called Blind Spot?
No.
It's about the woman who wakes up in a duffel bag in the middle of New York City, and they unzip the bag. They think it's a bomb, and this woman pops out, and she's absolutely covered in tattoos from her neck down. And when I saw that particular scene, that opening scene, that influenced me because I thought, oh, my goodness, here is a woman that is tattooed from her neck down, and her fingers and everything. And I found that fascinating. So that was certainly part of this, the fact that she has this this birthmark or tattoo on her face. But then I also lived in downtown Vancouver for a long time, and I was, you know, very aware of the population on the downtown east side who are homeless and drug addicted, some of them mentally ill, and drawing off of their behaviors and things that you see when you're downtown and probably any city. So draw for that as well. So they're layered. They're little bits and pieces of things I've seen, things I've experienced, things I've watched on television or read about.
That's how Dave travels around, you know, in a duffel bag, so he doesn't have to pay for an extra seat.
That's true. It's all true.
With a Mickey in the side.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, when you're writing your characters, do you find that you have an inner monologue that you hear the characters in your head? Can you hear the prose, or are you more translating images and symbols and stuff like that when you're creating a story?
I see it visually more than I don't hear the words, but I can visually go through the whole scene. So it's like I've got a camera on my shoulder and I'm watching it play out. And I will often look at the scene from that perspective. And then if it's not working, if it's not emotional enough, I'll maybe put the camera on another character's shoulder and see what it looks like from that character's perspective, and or change the location to make it more interesting and more emotional. I always try to go for emotional. I like that. When I'm watching something or reading it and it makes me cry or it makes me angry, I try to go back and figure out why. And I use as much as I can of that when I'm writing.
Well, who are your characters to you? And I ask that in the sense of a lot of people that have been on the show will describe their characters as their family, their friends, their children even, things like that. Do you have that kind of connection with characters, or are they not like that at all?
They're not my children, for sure. They're my friends.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I like them. I like the characters. I enjoy their company, for sure. Sometimes I think of them as actors. Like, the people that I don't particularly, the bad guys are actors, whereas the good ones are my friends. I like being able to put the words in the actor's mouth. Actually, that's my very, very favorite part of writing is dialogue and being able to, you know, put the perfect retort in somebody's mouth at the razor sharp timing of it. Because in person, in my own life, I never do that right. You know, I always think of it after the fact.
It's interesting. So they don't tell you to do weird things, do they? Like,
no, but sometimes they surprise me. Sometimes they do surprise me. Like in this book, Sadie, the roommate, at one point, it was kind of halfway through the writing, and I thought, you know, Sadie is turning out to be far more interesting than Jane, which is kind of a bit of a problem because, you know, Jane's the main character, but I really enjoyed Sadie. So yeah, she surprised me in how interesting she was, for sure. Because she's fun. She's a hooker, and she's beautiful. And I like playing with the idea of what is beauty. And I really enjoyed it, especially in this book, because it's so obvious that the people in this book who aren't what society would call beautiful, they are the beautiful people. They are the ones who are the kind, nice people. And the ones who are beautiful have questionable morals, very questionable morals. So it really makes you question, you know, what do you assign value to? Are your beautiful people good? Are you beautiful people bad? And what does society do with the beautiful people versus the ugly people? And it's
just they promote them.
Yeah,
you do. Well, it's how it is. I think, you know, that makes me ask the question of, so when you're putting together something like Bloodmark or any book like this, you have the story of Jane and the other characters and things going on. But it sounds like there's a little bit of a subtext going on as well when you're talking about the beauty of each of your characters and where it's at and what is beauty. Is that sort of something you think about consciously when you're putting the book together?
I started thinking about it consciously towards the end of the book because I realized there was a kind of a theme running through it of beauty. And so I did go back and kind of highlight and emphasize those things. For example, the madam, Sadie's madam, I went back and dressed her in white and cream and pristine looking clothing with a hair, not a hair out of place. And I took Jane and made her as unappealing physically, you know, the ratty clothes and not paying attention, no makeup, that kind of thing. So it happened later in the book as I think that does sometimes happen. Like sometimes you're finished it and you realize, oh wait, there's something running through here that's more than just the story. And then you can go back and highlight those things and make it even more emotional and more of an impact.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like you named Jane, you kind of imaged Jane after Dave there.
I'm thinking maybe more Sadie. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to figure this out here. You know, we're gonna figure this out. What's going on? You know. So now that you've written some books and you're kind of, you know, you're getting it out there and you kind of have a regular sort of routine set up in doing a book and getting it published. When you look back at some of your very first stuff, do you ever wish you could go back and change it?
Oh, oh my goodness. Yes. It's amazing how your writing changes the more you do it. I suppose it's like anything, you know, the longer you do it, the better you get at it. Just most people don't have their early work out there for people to look at and say, what?
Yeah.
What was she thinking?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do. I mean, even my blog posts, when I go back and read some of the older ones, I kind of cringe a little bit. I've learned a lot over the years I've been writing, and I've certainly learned a lot from the editors that I've had the privilege of working with. And the more I do write, you hope you get better at it, but then you've always got those old books back there that you look at and kind of think, ooh.
Yeah, just change your name every 10 years.
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't have written that scene quite like that. Yeah.
And that comes with the experience, right? And as we grow. Do you have influences in the writing world?
I really like Deborah Harkness, her writing. I like the way they turn her shows into the movies as well. I really enjoy seeing how that works. I just recently read Victoria Aveyard's Red Queen series, and I was so surprised and impressed at the imagination that she threw into those books. I would never have imagined the breadth of superpowers that she imagined. You know, she's got people who have this ability to, you know, make their clothing into steel armor, and it's constantly shifting and changing. And I love the idea of character being able to influence the weather. I hadn't thought of that before. So, yeah, I find other authors extremely influential. And one of my earliest ones was The Chrysalids by John Wyndham. I love the idea of the ability to communicate telepathically and over great distances. And that stuck in my head.
Huh. That's interesting. It's funny where things come from and where you get ideas from to that influence you, and you wouldn't think about it. Until it happens. And that. So any other writer that you wished you'd work with?
Worked with, you know, the one writer who is, I love her sense of humor, is Charlene Harris. She wrote the Sookie Stackhouse books, and I love the way she was able to take these characters and turn them into human beings that had a sense of humor and did good things and bad things, and just told an interesting story. I mean, that's the whole point. Is, you know, I want to entertain people. I want them to maybe walk away with a sense of wonder, for sure. But I want them to be entertained. To, you know, take them away from the world for a little while. So anyone who can do that, I want to study how they did that and repeat it in my own work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So what do you think you're going to do next after something like this?
I'm already working on the story arc for the next, I think there may be two more books in this series. And so I'm writing the outline for the next one. And the third one I'm calling question mark right now because I don't know what it's going to be. But if I get towards the end of the second book and there's not enough meat there to take it into a third, then there's definitely enough for a second. And I'll just leave it at the second if I can't think of some more interesting things for the third one.
Well, I'm wondering, after writing fiction, especially, you know, you're writing, you know, some stuff that might be darker. Do you have a way to decompress after that, recharge, relax, or do you even need to do that? Do you just, you know, move on to the next novel?
Yeah, I don't usually need to. I find this entertaining and fun. The writing for me is what keeps me happy and sane. And I actually, you know, talk about it's rather dark. I think I didn't realize I was dark, but I think I must be. Because I had decided that I would write a Christmas story, just to try to shake things up. And I thought I'd write a Christmas story. Well, I had a heck of a time coming up with a Christmas story that didn't involve dead people. And I kept thinking, this can't be Christmas. So, no, I don't, even though it's dark, it seems to be what makes me happy. So, I don't take a break. I do have periods where I'm not writing. I'm just, you know, generating ideas. And that's the stage I'm at now. I'm still generating ideas. So I'm putting them into a rough outline. I'm kind of highlighting what are going to be the killer scenes kind of thing. But when I start writing, I don't do any outlining once I'm writing. I just start writing and off I go.
Wow. Do men quite often get killed in your books? I was just wondering how your husband is. I just throw that out there, you know. Is he alive? Can he
No, but he's off.
Proof of
he
life.
Often has the blunt end of my waking up mad.
Oh, I was going to say. Yeah.
Do you know what you did in my dream? Don't you ever do that again.
Yeah, you have a frying pan by your night table. Slap. Yeah, I can see that. You know, just, you know, maybe if he could come on camera and blink twice. You know,
yeah, are you alive?
Does he need help, you know? Doesn't have to say anything. Yeah.
I keep him in a cage.
I'm not even surprised one bit. Okay, so now, do you have a website and a place that you like people to come find out more about you and your writing?
Sure. They can get me at jpmcleanauthor.com, and they can also on that, they can download the first chapter of all of my books in a PDF format so they can read a little bit about it, and all of my connections to all of my social media are on there.
Great. We'll have that up, of course, as well, so people listening can one click and find you.
Thank you.
If someone was listening now and they've never heard of you before, which I don't see how that could be, but they've never heard of you before and they wanted to buy one book, which book would you tell them to get to find out what kind of a writer you are?
I would tell them to pick up Bloodborne. It's out next week.
Ooh,
yeah, I think it's representative of my writing now, for one thing. You know, I have improved over the course of all the books that I've written, and I think if they really enjoy that one, then they could go back and start with the Secret Sky, and that'll get them going on a whole series.
Yeah, well, and we talked about this before, and I ask this a lot. Because you must have wrote or finished writing this or been in the edit process during a lot of the COVID, you know, ups and downs that we've been through. And I know that for myself, it really interfered in my writing. But I'm just an emotional mess. So that's, you know, that's another problem about, you know. But how does this affect someone like you? Do you think maybe had you write a little darker and you didn't realize it, or what's your thought on COVID?
Well, that's an interesting thought about writing darker. I hadn't given that a lot of consideration before. But I, when this thing started, we had, my husband and I had just returned in February from a trip, and everything was shutting down as we were driving back to the house. And when we got back to the house, I spent a lot of time just glued to the TV, not quite comprehending the massive event that this was going to be. And I found that I was completely stymied. My creativity just, you know, hit a roadblock. And I found I couldn't concentrate for more than about 10 or 15 minutes without wanting to turn the TV on and see what was happening. Was anything new happening? So I think I went through a period of, you know, 4 to 6 months of not being able to write creatively at all. And then when I did start writing again, it was a slow start, and I was writing Bloodmark at the time. So at the time there was a lot of question about, are you going to include the pandemic in your writing? Is that going to impact your story? And I made the conscious decision, no, it wasn't going to. And part of the reason I made that decision was because I found it so depressing that I didn't want to bring that into the story, as dark, I guess, as the story is. I didn't want that to be a part of it at all. I didn't want to read about it in my fun time, you know, my escapism.
I just wonder how much we're going to see the effects of what we've done, you know, like in 20 years. When you look back, I wonder if you'll look at some of this writing, like this book, and kind of go, wow, that was a little bit, like you might see things that you don't see now.
Yeah, I think that might be the case. Yeah, it's certainly impacting. It's impacting so many things that I don't think we even know yet, like the communities that have kind of fallen by the wayside, the celebrations that haven't happened, you know, the 65th birthdays and the 50th birthdays and the 25th wedding anniversaries and weddings and funerals, all those things that we haven't been able to do the way we normally do, I think has really impacted communities all over the world. It's kind of hard to put your head around how big this thing is and just how many people have been affected and impacted by it.
Well, and it's very strange. It's strange in the sense that, you know, 100 years ago when they dealt with the pandemic, they had no communication and they didn't have the things that we do now. And so it may be in a way, I think for some people, it doesn't seem real. You know? And that's caused a lot of weird behavior, and it's been a really strange thing. But I think all of this will kind of work its way out in our art, in our writing, in shows and stuff. You know, it's one of those things. I wouldn't include the pandemic in a book because we don't know where it's going. I think it would be tough, but I think it definitely gets into our emotions if you're an emotional writer.
Oh my goodness. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It would be very interesting to look back 10 years from now and see if I do think that this book is particularly dark. Maybe it is.
Yeah. And you can't really see it when you're real close to it, especially, you know, it's so soon, it's so recent, it's so still happening, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That it's something you won't get for a number of years. So, you know.
Yeah. And then I'll look back and say, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I wrote that.
Yeah. No, I know. That's what Dave, we have to keep him in the cage.
Yeah.
In the basement of the house.
Yeah,
in this room.
Kind of let him out.
Well, he's out of the, he's out of the knapsack now, so that's good. That's up one.
Yeah.
On the bus.
He's the guy riding the bus. And that's talking to himself, you know. It's kind of weird. Kind of weird thing. Well, that's interesting. It's been quite a conversation. We've learned a lot. Learned a lot from you. We learned not to sit in a coffee shop in Vancouver.
That's right.
end up in your next book, and it won't be a pretty ending. I stay out of that one, boy. I'll tell you. You know what? You know, one of the first fiction writers I interviewed years ago, J.D. Horn, who does really good stuff, he said that he would be out, you know, doing whatever. And he could be in a lineup in a supermarket, and someone could be really rude and cut in and do all this stuff. He would take that character and put it in his book and kill them. and I love that. I think that's a great outlet for, you know, anger or upset, you know? Yeah. So just remember that. So now Dave is up for that, if you want to take him and push him into a river or something. I don't know. Throw the whole duffel bag in all at once.
Yeah, leave it zipped up. Yeah. Toss it into the brink.
Yeah. All right, so he's pickled. He won't die.
He'll float.
He's the Keith Richards of radio.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
No. Anyway, well, it's been a fantastic conversation, and we really appreciate you being here, and hopefully continued success, and we'll have you on again sometime.
Well, thank you, Dave and Al. It's been wonderful to be on your show. Really appreciate it.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.